He made all possible attempts to persuade her to calmly talk to a cab about all her life, without hiding anything. She squirmed apparently as a snake during the secret feeling of guilt towards his brother, as she tried to commit an innocent tone. She, however, became more and more agitated and asked them to finally go away and leave her alone, because she had nothing more to confess. Karl Garan came out very sad and discouraged. Over a cab's features was a heavy seriousness. "Now, you take over the watch of her," he told me. "We get up again, but we'll return as soon as you call us. Be patient towards her, tie her not with long persuasions, let confession be voluntary, otherwise it has no value. You should understand what is still weighing on her. God be with you." They shook hands and were soon out of sight. I sat alone at the meager bed where Gertrude rested. She had not noticed when I came in. She was lying with her head wrapped in a ragged cloth, and sobbed. It was a pitiful sight to see this once celebrated woman be like that, wretched and miserable in the cold and darkness. I clasped my hands and prayed that God would have to warm her heart so that she could no longer resist his love. Sob gradually became weaker, and I think she fell asleep. I must confess that I found myself quite creepy, as I sat and stared into the darkness ahead of me, alone among so many unfortunate in that torment's dwell. The silence was disturbed only by an occasional moaning sigh, and occasional cries of anguish, which came from the nearest trenches. My eyes had gradually become accustomed to the darkness, so that I could see the nearest objects. The decor, if one can even speak of such in this house, was the simplest imaginable. She was lying on a bench with a small pillow under her head and a blanket over her. The floor was covered with flat stones, walls and vaults were naked mountains, a low flat rock was all there was to sit on. How long I sat there and watched, I have no idea. Finally she awoke, sat up and stared at me. "Oh, it's you," she said. "Have you come to pick me up from here?" It was then not too soon. "Yes, I have come to fetch you," I replied, "but you've probably still difficult to get out, I fear." "Yes, I have been so difficult to move, is so heavy, you see, it's as if the body was made of lead. But you may be able to carry me." "I do not think I can. It would probably be better if you threw away what is weighing on you." "Yes, yes, you're probably right about that, and I want to, but it is so difficult, you see. I will not tell him everything. Imakup who are here. I've always said the worst thing, is not that enough?" "No, it's probably not. Do you remember how it is in one of the Psalms of David, when I wanted to keep silence, languished my legs? That is why your legs do not want to carry you. You want to conceal anything, it's a debt you do not want to admit, and as long as you can do that, you do not get out of here. But it is so difficult, you see. You know what it is. You, yourself was taking part in that, it was you who put it into effect. Then it's you, you and no one else to blame. Why should you pass it to me?" "I understand what you mean, and I confess that I also have a large debt of the crimes we committed against your brother. That he never forgives you. He has already forgiven me and wants nothing more than to even forgive you. He was here just now. I was so scared when I saw him, but he did not know I had any part in his death, I could see in him. How then can I confess it to him? It goes over my strength. Oh, he knows our offense in all its details, but he harbors no grudge against any of us for that matter. He is so good, your brother. What do you say? He knows it and do not hate me?" It was strange. "Once you reach the point where he stands, you cannot hate. Nor is it for his own sake, he wants you to apologize. It's for you, for your sake, to be light-hearted and so can come out from this darkness, out into the sunlight, out to joy. He wants this. For me there is no joy." "Do not say so. I know that roses will grow even in your path, when yourself want to." "How can you tell so?" "Because God is good, he has created us for joy, not for grief. And what he once designed, it is said he also implement, if we do not delay his plan by going away from him on misguided ways. Strange speech that. Never did you say that to me on earth. No, there we both went astray. But when, since I came here, I have learned a lot. Also you will be taught, when you are well out of here. I do not care about that. I do not believe in that story about a god and a heaven. Is he able to, he should trample me to dust rather than let me suffer like this, but either he has never existed, or else he is impotent. Exactly, that you are suffering proves that he is alive and powerful, even in the depths of your soul, for he lives as the life spark, as he planted it. You have wanted to strangle this spark, but the shouts within you are there, and you get no peace in your soul till you give it air. He has a great voice, you have probably experienced. She said nothing, she crouched in her corner and sat cradling her head in her hands, and then she fell on the bed again, and wrapped the blanket over herself. She was quite still, but I do not think she was asleep. Again I sat there alone with my thoughts, but now no longer with so uncanny feelings as before. I began to feel a hope of succeeding in my efforts, and it filled me with joy. But the hours were long in the dark, I had no idea what time was. Then it was as suddenly the rock wall opened up. I saw a vision, or rather a series of visions, which followed close on each other with the warm color over it. I will try to describe what I saw, while Gertrude lay there motionless beside me. I saw a gypsy camp in a field outside a large city. It was a sunny day in southern region's warm sky. The camp was celebrating a festival, and many people from the city had flocked to look at it. A young gypsy woman was dancing on a widespread carpet to the sounds of a violin, played by an old gypsy. She was breathtaking with dark dreamy eyes and black coiled curls, swaying bass with the dance. The mouth wore a defiant smile that suited her well. She wore a thin silk blouse, and over a small green velvet jacket studded with sequins and gold embroidery. A short striped skirt that reached above the knee, and a gold knit belt completed the costume. Arms and legs were bare. And as she danced, there was a glow in every movement. A young man among the spectators, by the clothes to be a nobleman, was very captivated by the young dancer. He walked up to her when the dance ended, and invited her to an expensive jewel, which he took from his frill. The scenes change quickly. I see them on horseback. He was her with him on the pommel of the saddle and spurs his horse to the most rapid rate the double burden may allow. It is a veritable escape, and it is also of necessity, because not long after coming to gypsies, also on fast horses. Is he getting away with his precious burden? If not, he is dead. A castle raises its high towers not far from there, there goes the way. The distance between the persecutors and the persecuted are getting smaller. The first night already near. Then the rider once again spurs with such force the horse's sides that he breaks off with desperate speed. He reaches over the drawbridge, which the attentive hands immediately are pulled up. The two pursuers are close behind with such force that they have difficulty to stem their little horses of falling in the moat. They ride empty-handed back. Then I saw the following scene more and more indistinct, perhaps as a result of that I felt more and more upset. I did not know why, but it took me so deeply. I saw a wild life at the castle with drinking and woman plunder, and I saw the gypsy put away into the void room where she was, well not as prisoner, but secretly guarded. Finally, I saw her with a child in her arms come out from the castle alone and abandoned. A shudder shook my whole being. What did these pictures mean? What had I to do with them? A voice within me said, "It was you and it was her." I was petrified. So that was my debt to Gertrude. It was I who had put her out of the gypsy circle in which she was happy and where she might have been a good person. It was I who had poisoned her life and then thrown her out. It was I who had sown bitterness in her soul. It was my fault that she was where she now lay. I knelt by her bed and stretched out her arms to her. She turned slowly and looked at me with wondering eyes. "Gertrude," I said, You have suffered unspeakable. I have done you a terrible evil. It's my fault, can you forgive me?" She just stared in astonishment at me. I said, "It is I who seduced you. It was me who plunged you in the dark. I should be there where you sit, and you should go free." "What do you mean?" she asked. I told her what I read in the pictures I've seen. She sat quietly and listened with the most strained attention. "Yes, Wolfgang," she said when I stopped, "it was you and it was me. I know this." She took at her chest. "All the trapped bitterness I have been carrying on. Now I understand it." "Excuse me," I whispered. She stroked me slowly over the hair. "Wolfgang," she said with a voice so gentle that I never heard it before, "we both have wronged against each other, but I've been playing with your tenderness. I've incited your passions, and I have drawn you into the dirt. You have raised yourself out of your humiliation, but I'm the yet. Help me. Help me, Wolfgang. I am a lost creature." She fell on my neck and wept bitterly. "Oh, if I had Karl Garan here and could tell him how bad I acted. May he forgive me if he can." On my call came a cab and Karl Garan, and now followed a touching scene between brother and sister. A cab wrapped her in a cloak, and we carried her out of the cave, away through the long tunnel and up through the shaft, into the clear sunlight. A hymn from the higher spheres tinted us to the meeting, "Joy in heaven when a sinner turns back." The period that followed is of little interest to others, but for me it was of an indescribably importance. It involved all the bliss I then was able to enjoy, and also a job so blessed and so invigorating for my spiritual strength that I will always remember it with gratitude. As I had saved Gertrude and had to leave her for a few good friends' care, I got a cab's long-awaited word that I was now ready to move on to the next realm, where I was given permission to share a home with Gerda. First I must finish my course of study with some supplementary tests. Gerda came herself and picked me up at her house, which now would be mine. Here we lived for a long time the happiest life together, in a nature that after my former concept seemed like a paradise. To describe this life in Earth's imperfect language, would be for me to destroy all the impressions of the same, still not being able to draw a real image thereof. I have to give away how much I want to communicate something to the Earth, ground people that can awaken the desire for such an existence. If I were a poet, I would write an ode to love, for this feeling was always fresh, always a new source of joy in our lives. It was this divine force that drew me out of the humiliation I once dropped into. She had done it, she had fulfilled the strong words that she once, when she herself was a physically broken creature, had spoken to me in my extreme need, "I must save you." No one, however, imagined that this life was a lazy absorption in all sorts of so pure pleasures. Rather, it was a very strenuous and strained life for good. Once you come so far in developing the desire to do well, for good's own sake, it will never be boring work. Then you get from the spiritual senior leaders, you voluntarily placed yourself under, the tasks best suited to one's forces, and the more joy you cannot experience than if you carried out your work so that the spiritual leaders have a positively, word, or a grateful gaze. What were these missions? Dash may anyone ask. They can vary infinitely. Think of the innumerable multitudes of needy eternity travelers of all possible stages of development. Think of all that whimpers over the chains they put on themselves, all rushing blindly towards their own destruction, and sits bloody against the obstacles they encounter on their way, all who grope in the darkness, all suffering from spiritual or temporal need. All these need assistance, whether they are on the physical plane or have moved over to the astral. Wailing and misery are the same here as there. It is thus a large field, which provides for the willing. It's just sadness that we unfortunately can accomplish so little. But between these times of hard work, we often had to perform together, she and I. What a glorious rest to return to her home up here, that this to get acquire knowledge, to make field trips to other more advanced world globes. Yes, life is infinitely rich in possibilities. Once we got to follow a cab on such a journey, we shot at a dizzying speed through space, to something desolate planet and sank back down on this, one of Earth's neighboring inhabited planets. This is in its own planetary life, older than the Earth and therefore its humanity have reached a higher development than of the Earth. Comment Rune. Suppose this means Venus, which has reached a higher level or frequency of their course learning or physical level. We have therefore much to learn from them, not only on their mechanical and technological aids, but also on social and ethical conditions. Our stay there was however very short, because when our cab was finished with his task, we had to turn back together with him. However, it was a most agreeable and instructive journey, which I shall never forget. What particularly struck me by surprise, was how easily people wore the physical shackles. They are burdened not nearly as much thereof as the Earth's humanity. Alas, we would be there. But although Earth fetters are so heavy, though gripped finally, just in all the glory the free life offers, a desire rises to return to Earth again. Longing is perhaps not the right word, for this strange feeling. One perceives it first as an internal challenge, for which initially is shying away, but it comes back stronger and stronger each time, until it finally becomes so overpowering that one make a request to be allowed to go down to Earth's physical level again. It is as the internal weaknesses of one's being become more and more relevant the longer you stay here and come into contact with more advanced spirits. They also feel that the way to come further goes through the Course Matter School, for it is, strange as it may sound, just that which brings together material experience for the building of his spiritual nature. It is in the world of matter where the spirit goes with the blindfold, as it lets her inner nature's imperfections come forward and assert itself, and which thus makes his, her most valuable experiences. When the stuff, experiences, which is thus collected, and is as used up, you have to go down again to collect more. Gerda was initially deeply saddened when she heard that this earth hunger or lust for reincarnating seized me. She did not believe it and asked me to dismiss these thoughts, but they did not allow themselves to be silenced. I knew enough, also for myself, how difficult this divorce from Gerda would be for me, but nothing could shake my decision. When a cub next time came to see us, I asked him about my desire. First he answered nothing, but looked at me with a look so full of tenderness and sadness that I almost got scared. Was the life I went down to and meeting, so full of trials? "You dear Wolfgang," he said finally, "I am glad that you made this decision without influence from anyone. I've been expecting it, because I think the time is right. Now be equally steadfast and faithful as you are dashing. The life that awaits you is, as you may well understand, not easy. You must undergo a rigorous education to strengthen your weak character, and you have a thing or two to make amends to those you did wrong," he added in a low voice. "Dear Akab," Gerda said, "do not encourage him to take this step. I do not think he even has gathered strength for the trials that this means. I think he should stay here still some time. I cannot let him go," she whispered with tears in her eyes. "Maybe you go after him," replied Akab with a friendly smile. "But now you must not make him despondent. He should go the way he feels is right." "Do you know anything, Akab, about the outer contours of the life I should go into?" I asked. "Nothing is for certain," he said. "I just know that whatever you have to go through, it is not harder than you are able to bear, and then I will always be supportive by your side. I will now make your request to the High Masters who rules over birth and death. Is there a particular desire you will ask for? Tell them only that I may serve most of the burden that weighs me down. I cannot wait to get rid of it. Take not too much on your shoulders, it can be hard enough anyway. Better to share what you have to atone, for the many lives, that's my advice." Gerda had been sitting quietly for a moment. Now she stood up, walked over to a cab and put her hand on his shoulder. "Report the same time for me," she said firmly, while big tears rolled down her cheeks. I must follow him. You warm soul, said Akab, you are always big and strong, but you shall not go down if you have not received the word from your inside. Wait, it will perhaps be soon. One should not go nature in advance, either at birth or death. Akab left us, and soon thereafter I was being called to keep me ready. It was a strange time that followed. I kind of became numb, and my consciousness was swept in an increasingly thickening fog. Comment Trune. This is preparing entering the bliss level realm or pure memory level, which precedes the normal new deep diving into a new physical incarnation, according to the Danish wise man Martinus, and his spiritual cosmology. And comment. While I was still clear enough to believe what I saw, I was once again to slow down to earth to see my coming mother. She was so light and good, but the external conditions in my new home were such that I doubt that if I had seen them before, I had returned. Now I was already so bound that I could not think of a return. The fluidic connection band between my mother and myself were already linked. The last thing I remember from my lovely time of liberty was Gerda's tender care of me, and she never left me during this time, never. Her last words were like a balm for my numb senses, be of good cheer. I will be looking for you, and will find you. Part 3, back on Earth's physical level. So then I was back on Earth. I was born in a small hut in a remote village, far from civilization's major streets and roads. My father was a poor agricultural laborer, who narrowly found living from the little farm that was his. My mother was of the bourgeois family and had been well brought up. It was a whole little novel, how she had come to end up as a farmer's wife in the remote backwoods. She had taken a liking to Father when she was young and did a travel in these areas, with him as their guide. It caused a sensation in the family when she decided to become his wife. But she was big and strong and good as well, and she kept by her husband. Therefore all went better than anyone had expected. My father was a simple, unpretentious man, but not of a different culture than the elementary school and had an intimacy with nature had given him. But they lived happily together. I was for long the only child, but several years after I was born, a daughter came who was christened the name Maria. My name was Johan. Our family name is of no importance, nor is it important to specify exactly where our home was located. Early on I learned privations of all kinds. It was probably many times lack of bread in the little forest cottage. From early on, I also learned to work, first with chores in the kitchen with mother, then with father in the fields in the stable. The school was far from home, and it was not an easy thing for a little boy like me to get around in rain and shine to the little school, where an extremely frugal spiritual food was given. But I was amused to read and had, as the schoolmaster said, very easy for learning. Once I received from a friend at school, to borrow a storybook, which became my dearest treasure. With it, I slipped into the woods and was then not easy to find my repository. I heard mother calling me, but pretended as not hearing. I was in the midst of an adventure that I could not tear myself away from. But it was trouble to be, when I then had to confess what I did, and also that I heard the cries, but not obeyed them. My mother probably thought it was sorry for me, but the father was strict and saved not on punishment. My childhood was cheerless until I got my little sister, and she gave me a lot. Nothing was so funny as to watch and play with her, and I also got to take over much of the care of Maria. My happiest moments I had under the big tree behind the barn when I got to sit with Maria at my knee and tell stories to her of giants and trolls and beautiful princesses. I enjoyed seeing how the little eyes shone with fear and astonishment, and to feel the slender limbs tremble with fear when trolls uttered his awful noises. She was cute, my little sister, and we were best friends. When she reached the age of 6 years, I was the one who taught her to read. She had an early awakened mind, and when I was 8 years old, I could teach her a good deal of what little I gathered in the school, so Maria, when she began her schooling, were already quite at home in the school books. The years passed. I was now big boy and needed to be out to seek my services, because it was not possible anymore to just go home and help father. In addition, the farm was too small. It was with a heavy heart I parted from my father and mother, and especially from Maria, but it could not help. I took the pack on my back and went out into the world. At first I was a little discouraged, where I wandered in the sun on the long boring road ahead, but as I got further from home, my courage grew. However, it is a great feeling when you are 18 years, to be free and stand on your own. I had intended to seek me service on one of the larger mansions that were lower down the in the village. It also succeeded. I was employed first as a laborer, then as a foreman at a large farm, and was striving to work, and had on the whole pretty good. All my spare time I used to read, for I had an unquenchable thirst for knowledge. My master was kind to me and I had to borrow many valuable books, particularly on agriculture and animal husbandry. I saved from my salary all that I could quit. Finally, when I gathered what was needed for a year's living expenses, I took leave of my master and became a student at an agricultural college. I had not seen home again since I walked out of there, but Maria and I often wrote to each other. It was my greatest pleasure when it came a letter from her. She was now a grown girl of 17 years. What I longed to see her, but I could not afford to put money on a long journey. Everything went well for me in your hands. When I had completed my degree, I got through a relative's influence, a favorable lease in the vicinity of some larger country town. Now I wanted to get Maria to me, to look after my house. She'd probably also like to come, but our mother had recently died and she could not leave father alone in the yard. Well, I have to get married, I thought, but I just had no particular inclination to it. I was long undecided, mostly because it just was not someone I really liked. Then something happened that was designed to intervene deeply in my destiny. There came to the city a theater troupe, and I went in to see a piece that newspapers said were very famous. But it was not so much the piece I saw, but one of the actresses, a young dark-haired girl with unusually handsome features and a special fascination in all her being. I stayed in town and watched her night after night, until I could no longer suppress my feelings, but made her acquaintance and asked for her hand. I fell into love. I did not ask who she was or where she came from. I was not thinking about how bad she could fit in the position I had to offer her, I just wanted to take her as she was. She rejected my marriage proposal a bit chilly and went shortly afterwards with a troupe from the city. I was changed. I had no strength in my work. Everywhere I went and whatever I was doing was Laura's beautiful picture in my mind, enchanting and paralyzing. I went as a dreamer and neglected my duties. Finally, I decided to go after her. She appeared in another city far away. She was very surprised when she saw me, and I think it made a powerful impression on her when she saw how strong my feelings were. She thought for a few days and then gave her assent to our association. 6 months after Laura was my wife. Now first, I wrote to Maria and told of my marriage and how everything had passed. She wrote back a long letter, which was one persistent anxiety story. It seemed like a wake-up call. Fool that I am, what I had done. It was not long before I discovered the big difference in our characters. She was capricious and domineering. I, weak and submissive. The love mist I've lived in evaporated soon and I saw the reality soberly in the face. Here we had to make the best of the situation and take the consequences of my folly, like a man. I realized that I was all to be too compliant. Should I not give up the empire in my own house, I had from the beginning to be with firmness. But I also knew how difficult it would be and what battles it would cost. Some time passed, however, all well. She had, though not the slightest interest in the farm and household, but she was happy and cheerful, mocked me for my robust habits and manners, and was on the whole, both pleasant and friendly. But it lasted not for long. The conflicts did not take long in coming. She did not like the quiet and monotonous daily life that we had to live. She was accustomed to travel, to constantly see new people, to hear the applause estimates across the ramp, to feel noticed and celebrated. What did she care about the barn and milk room, where pigs and chickens, it was her abomination. She became irritable and touchy, and little was better when I responded in the same kind.